Dude, there's no way I'm putting her through this hell of living. And so for me, I was like, my decision is I just want her to be at peace. And after my mom passing, I've just been so much more open about death being, I don't know, more peaceful and like God being more loving. It's really helped me discover what kind of stories I do want to tell as well, because I'm constantly talking with my therapist.
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, where we share underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Tan. So if you don't know, Sophia and I have been in a long distance friendship for almost 10 years at this point, which is a long time. We've never went to the same school or lived in the same city, but Sophia, you've witnessed me on my journey from working as a software engineer to entering and learning about the joys and challenges of being a filmmaker and also working as a creative. And I would say that one of the most unique challenges that come with working as a creative has to do with our big feelings intermingling with our career. So I would say that for me as a software engineer, of course, I would have feelings come up from work conflicts or the joy of accomplishing an issue, but the inherent work itself of fixing bugs and pushing out a feature don't inherently involve my feelings. And so that's a big challenge that I have working as a filmmaker of how is there any time to put distance between me and my work? And especially when it's an industry that is so fueled by passion and not necessarily by money or quality of life. And I'm really excited that we have our guest today to kind of share her two cents on this. Our guest today is Eleanor Cho, a writer and director dedicated to highlighting the extraordinary stories of ordinary people in order to humanize others and inspire empathy. She's developing her first feature based on her short film, Dinner Is Ready. Sophia, we got a chance to watch Dinner Is Ready together when you came and visited. I wanted to see if you had any immediate reactions or reflections you wanted to share with Ellie.
Yeah, I actually just rewatched it, which is why my
What?
face is a little blotchy. I was
Aww.
really moved by the theme of having one last chance or one more chance to talk to someone who had passed, especially when your most recent interaction with them didn't capture all the love that you had for them. I'm so excited to chat with you, Ellie. I'll let
Thank you,
Tan kick
thank
it
you,
off
thank
with
you.
the first question.
How did you personally discover film and decide to pursue it? You grew up, I know you grew up in Orange County. Sophia and I both grew up in the Bay, and we've talked a lot about how we never grew up really knowing anything about film or filmmaking. And so I'd love to hear how you kind of got in touch with it.
I don't have any like relatives or anyone in the film industry, and like growing up, I didn't even think like it was a possible career path for me at all. But one of my favorite things my dad and I used to do when I was young was rent out Korean videos from the Korean video store like down the street. So we'd walk there together, and then that's how I kind of got into the world of Korean dramas from such a young age. And it was just really fun, like going to an actual physical video store and borrowing these videos and like seeing my dad have these conversations with the owner and like talking about like, oh, like this is what happened on the latest episode and stuff like that. And I think just those precious simple moments like made me realize, wow, like television and film could really bring people together. And I think the solidifying event for me was when I watched Lord of the Rings and I watched all the behind the scenes footage. Filmmaking to me was just magic. Like it was crazy to see something come to life like that. And so I realized like at the age of like 8 or something, like, oh, I really want to get into filmmaking. I don't know how, but somehow I will try. I was actually like a really, really shy kid, and I'm still kind of shy, but I was like very introverted. And so my mom would always like push me to do these extracurriculars, and that's why she put me in like the art class. She put me in like gymnastics and ballet and just like a bunch of things because I had so much social anxiety and like I was so shy that she knew I couldn't live like that. So she pushed me a lot. And I think that really helped me find what I wanted to do.
I also want to talk about the role that art plays in your life. The way I think about art and the role that it plays in a lot of people's lives, I think it can kind of go into two categories. Art is sometimes an outlet for people to reflect on their experiences and their journey, but it can also be a place for escapism. Do you feel like art plays a role in more of one category than the other, or how do you kind of see art live in your life?
Definitely agree that art is a form of escapism. When you write these screenplays, you really get to control a lot of aspects because you're literally creating it from your mind. And so whenever my life, like my real life, felt very chaotic and felt out of control, the only control I could get was from writing and controlling that this world and this narrative that I could create. Especially when my mom was sick for 3.5 years, writing was definitely like, it saved my life because it was my outlet. I would just create these characters and create these moments where if I had like regrets in the past, like I would create it into the screenplay and like try to figure out what I would have said or like how the dialogue would have been different. And so in that sort of way, writing was very therapeutic and a source of escapism.
Yeah, it makes me think of even like those BuzzFeed videos of like expectations versus reality of like that awkward moment that you actually had in real life and you replayed in your head. You're like, what would I wish I had said and how would that have gone? And what fantasies can I think of happening in the future had I gone down that route? So you said that art saved your life, which I think is a really big statement to make. Can you talk a little bit more about the relationship between art and perhaps your well-being and your mental health as well, just on a broad sense?
Just like growing up from seeing my parents struggle so much as immigrants in SoCal, it just really impacted me. And my mom also had breast cancer when I was young as well. Even with that and like a lot of financial hardships that we went through, I think it really shaped my worldview in a very like sad way. Ever since I was young, like I knew I was depressed and anxious, and I never really thought I could figure out a solution in a sense for that, or like learn how to live with it, because I didn't know what therapy was. I didn't know anyone going to therapy. I didn't even know what a psychiatrist was or anything. When my mom reoccurrence with breast cancer came after I graduated from college, that's when I realized like, oh, like I really need to seek out therapy because I'm not going to be able to do this on my own. And so I've been going to the therapy for like the past 4 years, like on and off. It's really helped me discover what kind of stories I do want to tell as well, because I'm constantly talking with my therapist about my life story and like telling my therapist a lot of like the important moments in my life. And I feel like a lot of my screenplays come from inspirations from my life, like the hard moments. And so that's actually helped me become a better screenwriter. So I'm very thankful that I was able to like get the resources for therapy, because I know it's like really tough too. Also, taking medication, I was really hesitant about, because as a creative, like I think a lot of creatives are afraid it would stifle your creativity and stuff.
Yeah, but I think there's like this narrative of like how trauma and pain also fuels the art that you do. I'm curious what you think of that. Yeah.
I definitely like thought that at first, being depressed like is fuel for like my creativity and like blah, blah, blah. But then I think like when you're depressed and down in the dumps, like you don't want to create, like you don't want, like you don't have the energy to do any of that. And so when I started like medication and therapy, like it actually helped me be able to be in that mindset to like tell these stories from like a more of like an outside perspective, rather than being like so sullen and stuff and like just telling like really sad stories. I felt like I was really able to like place myself outside of the narrative and like see it from a different point of view. And I don't think I would have been able to do that without therapy and medication, for sure.
These topics that you're exploring, how do you think about creating the right distance between your life and your art?
Yeah, especially since you can spend months on the same project for just a long time, and especially when it's fueled by emotion, like how people navigate the sustainability of this career as a filmmaker.
You could always work on multiple projects at the same time and like come back to it, especially for screenplays. Screenplays like take a long time. For example, like with Dinner Is Ready, it was a short film and I dedicated like a year of my time to it, and it was about like my mom and like her passing and just her experience with like stage 4 cancer and stuff. So I think I was able to separate myself from that because it was also fantasy. I write a lot of fantasy genre that is grounded in reality, like a lot of like Hayao Miyazaki films. Having that fantasy aspect really helps me separate my emotions from it.
That's like your type of escapism within something that you are currently proactively reflecting on even, and also going through in your life. So that's really cool. You mentioned that you are always like talking about your life story and therapy. I'm curious, have you noticed if you talk about similar stories or the same events multiple times in therapy, do you notice yourself refining the way you tell that story, or also notice that your perspective on that same story is changing and even maybe influencing how you would later want to tell that story if you were to ever share it with the world?
Yeah, I definitely think it changes, especially because I'm on my fourth therapist now. So I've told my like life story to like three other people. Talon, I know like you saw this at like Jubilee Fellowship and stuff, but the way I tell like my life story, I don't know why, but I always smile and laugh.
She smiles, like, because, laughs, and swears at the all at the same time.
all at the same time. Because I mean, therapy has definitely helped me a lot, but I feel really uncomfortable like sharing my emotions and my life story like out loud, and so that's why like I laugh and I smile and stuff, because I'm just like very uncomfortable. But then in therapy, like especially now, my fourth therapist, I feel like I could say it like more easily now, and like put a distance between myself and my life story because I've said it so many times. I definitely do think I have a different perspective on it, like every time I tell my life story to someone.
I also want to touch on mental health with regards to the entertainment industry, because I've only been in it a little bit and it's a rough time. And I know from our conversations that you have had similar experiences too, Ellie. I'm sure for the average person, they might see movies and the entertainment industry and only associate them with like red carpets, glamour, but also at the same time, they might associate with the volatility of the industry and how unstable your career could be. I guess now that you've been in the entertainment industry for a while, what is something that you wish more people knew about from the outside?
It's harder than you think. Like, it's really, really hard, especially if you don't have relatives in the industry, which there have been countless times where my friends and I have lost out on job positions because the showrunner hired their niece or like nephew. And like, it's just very, very unfortunate, that added layer on top of being like a woman of color. It's also hard because you're like constantly comparing yourself. Mm-hmm. You will always be like the biggest critic of your own art, and art is so subjective anyways. And so someone may like your short film, someone may hate it, and that's just the way it is. And you can't let that really affect you to be in it and to stay in it for the long run. Like, you really have to love storytelling and filmmaking. You know, we only have one life, and I honestly have nothing to lose because I've already lost so much. So I think I've literally gotten to this mental state where I'm just like, dude, after just seeing how my mom had to give up on her dreams to come to America and like die from cancer, I was like, dude, there's no promises in life. Like, there's no promises that if you work hard, you're going to be financially sustainable, because my family like is not, and they work their asses off. And so I think for me, seeing that growing up, I was like, dude, I don't think there is a stable future in anything, really. I mean, I'm sure there is, but like, from my own personal life and seeing my parents suffer, we're all gonna die, so might as well do something you enjoy. That's like kind of my reckoning with life, like, do it because you're gonna die anyway.
I love that. I love this idea that
I love talking about deathbeds.
I love that there's no guarantee for happiness or stability or predictability or linearness. I think it's kind of freeing. It means that you'll run into challenges no matter what, and you might as well pick a path that makes the challenges worth it. It's a very badass attitude. Oh, thank you. I love it. Ellie, you've talked about how creatively gratifying it feels to be a filmmaker. So bringing us back to your film, Dinner is Ready, what were some creative decisions that you were the most proud of?
One of my first thoughts, even before writing the story, was having the daughter talk to her mom in English and her mom talk to her daughter in Korean. And a lot of people thought that was like strange, but the people that thought it was strange were like people who weren't bilingual. And so I was like kind of doubting myself, and I was like, wait, is it weird that that happens? But that's how I talk to my mom. Like, I talk to her in English and she talks to me in Korean, and that's like how we understand each other. It was really shocking for other people to witness that, because they're just like, how does that even work? And I was just like, that's just my life. Like, that's how I grew up. And like, a lot of children of immigrants like go through that. And so I think that's one of the main creative decisions like that I stood by, because I was like, it makes sense to me, so I'm sure it makes sense to someone else. If it doesn't make sense to you, then it doesn't matter to me. So I'm just like, it's like my creative choice. And so I think that was one of the big things. Another one was actually going with the mother actress who never acted before, and she's actually the actual mother of the daughter actress. So the actual mother and daughter. And so that was a huge risk I was taking, because the mom never acted. And so I was really scared, but it worked out in the end for sure, because like you could see their relationship like jump off the screen because they're actual mother and daughter.
Yeah.
So I think those two things, they're incredible to work with. Yeah, they're so amazing.
These two decisions are also very reflective of just like real life, like mother and daughter, real life mother and daughter, bilingualism, something that's real in your life. And I know that there are lots of narratives and stories about, as you know, an underrepresented minority or a filmmaker, sometimes those come into question when you're trying to, you know, make it in the industry. How do you stay true to your values and also decide for yourself what is okay to let go of, and then what is okay, or what is something that you for sure want to stand your ground on too?
It was for some reason like a huge fear that a lot of Asian American writers, like they just didn't want to get boxed into being solely the
Asian American storyteller.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then for me, ever since my first screenwriting class at USC, like I've never, ever, ever written a story like with a white person in mind. Like it was always a Korean American or Asian American character, because that's just me. And I didn't think anything like crazy of it or anything. And so when people kept saying like, oh, they're afraid to be boxed into this thing, like maybe it's just because I don't have enough experience getting hired and stuff to write stories. But I feel like I don't really mind that in a way, because I mean, there needs to be more of our stories anyways. Like, I've never been really afraid to stand my ground. I don't know, because it's just real life that we've lived. And so I don't think I'd ever be afraid to stand my ground when it's who we are.
Yeah, you know it to be so true in your own life. And so who's to say that wouldn't be true for someone else, if not many other people? Yeah. So in Dinner is Ready, as well as your feature idea that I've had the privilege of getting to see a little snippet of, afterlife. Afterlife is such a big theme. And I'm sure this is also like fueled from your own lived experiences. But I'm kind of curious, like, were you always interested in the afterlife? And also this is specifically very Korean afterlife too. Korean cultural afterlife. And what interests you about the afterlife, especially since you also grew up as a Christian, which we can all relate to.
Yes. Growing up, going to a conservative Korean megachurch in Orange County, really just, it just made you fear death a lot. Like when I was growing up, I was like, oh my gosh, am I really saved? Like if I die right now, like, I don't know, am I going to go to heaven or hell? Like I always had that thought constantly. Instead of realizing that God is grace and love and stuff, I was afraid of the afterlife. Like I was so scared. I was like, dude, I'm doomed to go to hell. I'm gonna burn in there forever. And so like growing up, the afterlife was always on my mind, because every Sunday we'd hear about it, and we'd hear about hell, and we'd hear about like, oh, if you do these things, you're gonna go to hell and stuff like that, and you better repent. It was constantly like on my mind growing up. So I was always like really scared of death. And I think the first time I experienced death was when my grandpa passed away when I was in fourth grade. It was so traumatic for me because he kind of raised me. And so like seeing him like dead at the funeral, I didn't cry at all because I don't even think I could process it. And I was like literally like dissociating. I was just like, what is happening? And so I think from that moment on, like I was really afraid of like other family members dying and stuff. And so my fear of death grew even greater and greater. And then my mom got stage 4 and then she passed recently. And I think that kind of changed my perception on death. I think, I mean, when we were like in the ICU with my mom and stuff, and we were debating signing the do not resuscitate form and stuff, we were really, really debating, like, because she was basically like on the verge of death. And it's just like, do we want to keep her alive, suffering on a ventilator, or let her peacefully go? And so for me, watching my mom suffer for 3.5 years from chemo and like cancer, I was like, dude, there's no way like I'm putting her through this hell of living. And so for me, I was like, my decision is I just want her to be at peace. It was probably the hardest decision and stuff for me and my family, but we all like agreed, because even at that point, like my mom was just tired of living. And so I feel like that really changed my perception of death and how death can be peaceful and can be like a safe place. And I still am a Christian, but my beliefs on the afterlife changed a lot because I've been grieving and stuff. Like the afterlife has always been on my mind constantly. Like after my mom passed, I would like look up a lot of like NDEs, which are near death experiences. Like I'd like constantly be like, oh, like I wonder if my mom experienced this or whatever, just as a way of like consoling myself, because grieving is just very, very hard in general. My relationship with the afterlife has always been fearful. Now it's been a lot more like accepting. And now I'm just like, I feel like death should be talked about way more in our culture because we're all going to die someday. And I feel like for some reason, people, I mean, of course, I get it, like, we're afraid of death and stuff. But because of that fear, like, you just don't live in the present. Like, you just keep thinking about retirement or like, in the future, I'll do this, in the future, I'll do that. Like, my mom never got to retirement, like, she literally died. And so I'm just like, why is everyone like, not realizing and waking up and being like, dude, like, you have to live your life, because you never know when you're gonna die. And so that's like, why I'm focusing on a lot of stories about the afterlife. Like, the feature is about like Korean folklore of the afterlife. Even though I'm a Christian, I still love like fantasy and folklore, and I'm Korean, so I want to write it. And yeah, I mean, I feel like you guys know, like, growing up in like the Korean conservative megachurch, is like, oh, Harry Potter is evil, and like, oh, like fantasy, like blah blah, it's all evil.
To this day, I know nothing about Harry Potter.
Sophia's never read. She just never seen or read Harry Potter. That's the biggest difference between us. Probably.
Halloween, demonic. Don't even think about it. You think about it, and it's like the Satan is coming, you know, coming into your heart.
Yeah, I was actually telling my coworkers that they were talking about trick-or-treating, and I was like, I've literally only gone trick-or-treating once in my life, and that's because I had a homework assignment where I needed to gather candy and categorize them, and that's the only reason my mom let me go. Not only that, I did my assignment, and then my mom didn't let me eat any of that candy because she was like, you don't know what people have done candy. And I was like, and looking back, I'm like, what are people going to do with Smarties? Oh, so many people don't even like Smarties, you know? But anyway, it sounds like this relationship with the afterlife has gone from being very fearful of it to not only accepting, but also wanting to understand it and be really curious about it. I feel like that's such a big shift. What drew you to Korean folklore, aside from obviously the fact that you're Korean? What drew you to Korean folklore with regards to the afterlife, especially given your upbringing in the church?
Yeah, I think definitely because it was forbidden. Harry Potter, Halloween, like stuff with ghosts, demons, whatever. Like, it was just very like no go. And even my USC senior thesis film, which is a children's story about a child becoming like a lonely child becoming friends with a demon, basically, my parents were just like, why are you directing something like this? And I was just like, dude, it's just a short film. And so I think because I was always forbidden growing up and stuff, and I've always been like rebellious, so I think it just wanted me to like go into it even more. Like, if I can't have something, like, I just want it even more. And so, like, especially as my mom was declining more and more and stuff, and I was writing Dinner is Ready, like, why not throw in a Grim Reaper in there? Because I don't know how else I would have wanted to depict death as like a personified form, you know? Whenever I think of Grim Reaper, I always think of like the hanbok and like the kat and just like a Korean male. And so for me, I was like, I mean, I love, you know, like putting my Korean heritage into my stories anyways. And so that kind of got me thinking like, oh, like, let me research more about like the Cheolseumjaja and stuff. And then maybe research more about just like the river that they pass and like everything else and like all these things. So I've been researching a lot for my feature film because it has a lot to do with like Korean folklore, but it's like grounded in American culture.
Ooh, when you were looking into near-death experiences, did anyone's stories feel similar to the Korean folklores that you know?
No, actually. There's a lot of like, it's actually very interesting because near-death experiences are kind of like a newer thing because CPR wasn't invented until like recently. So a lot of the times, like, we couldn't do CPR, we couldn't resuscitate people and stuff, so they would just pass. But now that like people are like flatlining and you can bring them back to life, like, they're has been like this new phenomenon of like near-death experiences. I've like researched like a lot of different stories and stuff, and a lot of them like just differ. There's of course like a lot of people that like don't believe these stories and stuff, and so I take every story with like a grain of salt, but the fact that all of these stories are different makes me happier because I'm like, they're not all getting told to say the same thing, you know what I mean? Like, there must be something in the afterlife. It's not staged. Like, everyone is experiencing something different, and so I'm just like, everyone's afterlife journey is their own.
I never had a near-death experience myself, but the night after my grandfather passed away, I had a really vivid dream of a river, and I'm now thinking about it because you were mentioning Korean folklores and rivers. And in the dream, he was healthy, glowing. Mm. He was in a rowboat rowing away. And we were all on the shore waving to him. Mm. And we said, "You look so happy and you look so healthy." And he said, "Yeah, I am." And yeah, you know, I grew up Christian, so I knew nothing about rivers and afterlife. But maybe this dream means something.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for sharing. That's such a beautiful dream.
Yeah. I also feel, as a avid Korean drama watcher myself, I just feel that there's something different in the Korean industry of not being afraid actually to talk about the afterlife and actually imbuing a lot of the Korean afterlife into the stories. Like, we talked about a drama called Hotel de Luna. Mm-hmm. It's this hotel that people who have left unfinished business, they can stay at this hotel before they go into the afterlife fully. I've never seen anything like that in American Hollywood media.
Mm-hmm. Now that you've explored evangelical Christianity, near-death experiences, Korean folklore, what are some perspectives on the afterlife that you wish more people would explore that would give them hope and comfort?
Oh, yes, yes. I've been researching a lot about Christian universalism. If people are interested, you guys could check out the subreddit and stuff. I've actually learned a lot. I swear it's not a cult. I always have to say that it's not a cult. It's just a concept that a lot of different Christians from different like denominations believe in. For me, I've been actually like looking into that a lot more, because growing up as Christian, like, you hear God is love, God is graceful and stuff, and he's merciful. So I don't understand like how a being like that could be okay with people suffering in hell for eternity. And so that never matched in my head. And most of my friends are atheists or agnostics. So I was like, I don't understand how my friends could have eternal suffering just because they don't accept Jesus as their savior. I was just like, I don't know about that. And I've been agnostic before too. And so I just think that whole fear-driven approach to like the afterlife, oh, if you don't repent, you're going to hell or whatever, like, it doesn't help anyone. Like, no one's going to want to learn more about the afterlife and about Christianity through that message. For me, after researching, you know, like, and after my mom passing, I've just been so much more open about death being, I don't know, more peaceful and like God being more loving and stuff. And I was always like angry with God, because I was like, oh, like, how could you have my mom suffer like this and then take her away from me? But I kind of tried thinking about it on the other end. It's like, oh, like, God took her away from her suffering. Her days on this earth were just horrific. And so when I thought about how death is peaceful and how God can be loving, and it's not like God was like punishing us by taking our mom away or something, it just really changed my view on the afterlife and on who God is. I hope more people can think about it from that perspective, because for me, growing up in a conservative Christian church, I was just so afraid of death. I was so afraid. But now I'm just like, bruh, everyone's gonna die, so just enjoy life, man. Yeah. Be nice to people.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, had I grown up with the message that you're kind of talking about, Ellie, in the church, yeah, I think there would have been a lot of things in my life that I would have done not out of fear, but out of a place of a lot of generosity and curiosity. I think that's really beautiful that you've kind of discovered that for yourself through the subreddits and also through watching a lot of different mediums and cultural mediums as well. This makes me think about representation, and not just in the fact of like seeing people who look like this on the screen. I think it's the representation of all these different perspectives and worldviews that you are discovering that you could put on the screen. What are your thoughts on how filmmaking can be a vehicle for representation? And do you feel like it's a very powerful tool for that kind of representation?
Oh yeah, I definitely think films and TV, I just know they're so powerful. And an example I could give is like my Dinner is Ready screening that was in LA. The amount of people from the audience that came up to talk to me after and telling me about their mom's passing and how much they resonated with the story, even though they're not Korean American or anything, just that universal story about loss and grief. Like, they came up to me like crying and like just like thanking me for like sharing this kind of story. I just couldn't believe like my short film like could move people like that. I mean, from the very start of my short film, like, I wanted the audience members to walk away with, like, don't focus so much on the future or on, like, your work and stuff, and really be in the present. A lot of people, like, got that from my short film.
I mean, I got to go to your premiere, Ellie, in LA, which was amazing. Of course, everyone was crying like crazy in theater. And I have to share that my boyfriend James also went to the premiere, and you've met him, Ellie. He's like not necessarily the most expressive person, but immediately once the credits started rolling, he turned to me and he was like, "That was beautiful. I gotta go call my mom now." And I was like, "Oh wow." Like, I've never seen him decide to take an action purely just from watching something for 10 minutes, you know? So we talked about how art intertwines for you with mental health, afterlife, family, religion, just all these different things. When you look back on your films, what comes to mind first? Like, is it the big challenges working on the films? Is it the initial motivation to work on the films? Is it the fact that you can't even believe it got made? Like, I'm just kind of curious, what lasting impact do all of these stories have on you?
Yeah, I think it'll always be the audience members' reactions. That just makes me always forget about how tough it was to make the film. I just love telling stories, and just even being able to like move people's emotions like are just like a plus. Like, I'm just like, that's insane that can happen through like my stories. My best memories will always just be of my mom being at my premieres and like my family members being at my premieres. I mean, they were never supportive of filmmaking from the beginning. For them to finally be supportive of me and like have my back and like be proud of me at my screenings, I think those are the precious memories I'll always like look back on and be proud of.
To our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, you found it inspiring, or it got you to think about the afterlife in a different way, please think of a friend who would also enjoy it and let them know that we are on every podcast platform. And with that, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next Sunday.